Welcome to the Angry Screenwriters Podcast, where we're angry because movies should be better. We are your hosts, Jaden.
Carl.
And today, we are going to be talking about Van Helsing. Carl, I see you've got a big smile on your face there.
What do you think of Van Helsing? In my head, I said, and Carl. But you've just gone, Jaden. And I've gone, Carl. it felt awkward. I was like, whatever. I'm all about making a fool of myself. I do it every single day.
I mean, we are recording a podcast, so.
I'm an artist. fucking Van Helsing. Fucking Helsing. I think I told you, I can't remember what I said the last time we recorded, but I'm like, I know I watched this when I was a teenager, and I didn't have strong, like, feelings either way. Yeah. But watching it again, it was a slog. And I still actually don't feel strong feelings either way. Like, there's just stuff in it that it's like, things could have been better. The first thing that's most glaring to me, I miss films being like this, films from the 2000s. Where it's like, I appreciate them going big. You know what I mean? And I'm like, it's also like, looking at the budget, it's like, what, the budget's was under 100 million, I think. Or budget, no, 160. No, 160.
I was going to say. Yeah.
170 million. And it's like, that was a massive budget back then. Like, huge. So it's just sort of like, like, people are expecting a lot from that sort of film, and it didn't gross nearly as much as what it should have, to just break even. But like, I miss that. I miss the audaciousness of that. And in, you know, fucking people have been accused. It's easy to accuse Hollywood of being creatively bankrupt now.
Mm.
But this is the thing, like. They've been recycling these types of films, these Hollywood blockbuster films for years. The only difference is like when they were first made and then even remade and they sold the licensing rights. Like before we jumped on, before we recorded, we were talking about Hammer Studios and stuff like that. It's like those films were done on shoestring budgets and it was almost as if they were made purposely to be cult classics. And they knew it. They knew they weren't going to get all the audience. They were going to get the hardcore fucking horror fans. Yeah. And if they would have lowered this budget, which would have made some healthy restrictions with what they can and can't do, it would have, I feel like, made this film a lot better.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because, like, the biggest gripe that I had with this is that there was just too much happening, and some restrictions would really have helped with that. The thing that really surprised me with this as well is it's the same director that did The Mummy, and The Mummy is the tits.
The Brendan Fraser. Is
fantastic. Yeah, the Brendan Fraser Mummy.
Oh, damn.
Same guy that did it, and they could not be more different as films. Like,
they have great movies too, man. They were like, they're the movies I'm talking about, like the 90s and 2000s, where it was just like you had these summer blockbusters that were like, they were almost halfway in between being something, a completely new IP and a remake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where they're not bastardizing. I doubt there would have been any hardcore fucking like old school Mummy fans in the 90s being like, the fucking Mummy, you need to be dressed up in rags and stumbling around like, fuck this new bullshit. You know, and it's like, you know, or what, they've cast an Egyptian dude as the Mummy, what is this bullshit? Like, there wouldn't have been any of that like there is now. But that also is what makes those films yeah. great too, because it's just like, okay, look, we're gonna honor the past by not spitting in its face, but we are gonna try to do something a little bit different. And what's everyone else watching at the moment? Like, what else is out? Like, what other things are out? And it's like, let's take from them.
That's the problem at the moment. Like, you mentioned summer blockbusters and all those sorts of things. It's like everything's a fucking blockbuster now, and they don't need to be. Like,
it doesn't not every film needs to have a $200 million budget.
No, absolutely not. The one that baffles me is like Netflix and streamers doing those big budget films, because it's like, what's the point? Like, you've already got the subscribers. You're probably not going to get more asses in seats by having a huge budget film like that. Why are you not doing mid-budget movies? No wonder you're tanking cash.
Well, they've killed mid-budget movies. There are no fucking, like, an indie film, like, back when I went into film school, which was 2014, got 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
An indie film was $50 million still. So what the fuck is it now if that was an indie film 10 years ago? And there are no mid-budget films. Like, the last mid-budget film that I heard of, like, I think it's probably good to preface this when we're talking about this stuff. We are specifically talking about Hollywood, not, like Godzilla Minus One made ungodly amounts of money for, like, what, a $15 million budget. And so I still haven't watched it, and I'm dying to watch it. Like, it just, everything I keep seeing, I'm like, this is fucking brilliant. Like, and it's, so when we're talking about these things, we are very much talking about Hollywood films, because it's just so, dude,
the closest we're getting is A24, really. Like, yeah. A24 is sort of the champion of those smaller budget films, and they do them well. Some of them are pretentious as fuck, sure, but they're interesting stories, they're unique, they're doing things
that other people don't. Well, they're swinging for the fences.
Yeah, that's right. And they're taking risks.
Yeah. And it's just like, that's what you want your rookie players to do. You want them to be like, I'm gonna fucking swing for the fence. And it's like, you're not gonna capture everybody. Like, there's plenty of those. I've seen a few of those A24 films where I'm like, just watching the trailers, I'm like, I'm not the target audience for this. And I think it's a bad message to be sending this bullshit anyway. But I'm like, I'm more than happy for him to be around, because I'm like, well, you got to have a balance, right? There'd be plenty of other films that, like, people like me are watching, that those people that made those films are going to be looking at being like, what the fuck? You're sending a bad message. Go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.
Like, how many people does John Wick need to kill? It's like, apparently. Like,
yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the more the better.
All of them times four.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you're always going to have that. But it's like, when you keep it to those lower budgets, because you're essentially then, you're lowering your marketing, and your marketing then is word of mouth. It's, you know, most of the time now, I'm very cautious with the new films that I watch, especially out of Hollywood, and I will only watch them if they're sort of from trusted sources, people that I talk to, like yourself, you know, buddies in Sydney.
I don't have that great a track record with you, though.
You really don't, but there's a gem in there somewhere. Like, it's like, I trust your opinion, because I'm like, well, you're a trained screenwriter. Like, you're gonna see things that the average audience isn't gonna see. You know how the sausage is made. So, when you do come to me with a recommendation, that's taken with a lot more weight. So I'm like, well, fucking, this guy's, he's been around the block, he knows what he's talking about.
And I think the thing is, even when I do have a bad recommendation or something that you don't like, there's always a very robust conversation that we end up having as a result of it.
Correct. And that's always a good part. It's always, I don't care what anyone says, movies have got to be that. And there is, like, more art's got to be that, but movies is our chosen fucking art form, so they should always be that. They should be, like, when I say this, it doesn't mean that you can't have a political film. Because, you know, they're time capsules, they're reflecting of society and what they're at the time, but at the same time, they need to be made in an apolitical environment, where they're like...
That's the thing, right? And it's interesting, because you can spot the films where they're like, righto, we're going to lean on these political messages, and that's fine sometimes, but when it's really heavy-handed, like, I'm a firm believer in the fact that art is inherently political and there should be a message in art. But I think that that message is should be open to interpretation, not heavy-handedly beating you over the head with it. Well, like,
there's a difference between taking a political stance, like being an activist, and there's a difference between being like, hey, this is what I believe is the right thing, and then putting that into your art. Whereas, like, I feel like that's the thing that people brush up, myself included, people brush up against now, because a lot of the films coming out of Hollywood, not only are their budgets blown out of proportion, so you've got too many chefs in the one kitchen, you've also got it feels like propaganda. And it's just like, if you don't agree with us, then you are the problem. It's just like, that's what I mean by political messaging. It's like,
Marvel's the worst for that. Oh, everything Marvel puts out now feels like, well, I think Marvel's the big one in general, because when you look at and break it down, and shout out to Luke Preston, because he's the person that pointed this one out to me, those Marvel films are yay America, you know, very big on the idea of free choice and being proud and all these sorts of things, but they're not, you know. It really is such a pro-American stance that's hidden as something that's meant to be entertainment. And it's not as clear in all of them, but there's some that, holy shit, does it stand out, especially the later one.
I would argue the early ones were that, but that's also, I'd also argue superheroes are an American genre.
Yeah, that's fair. That is very fair.
Comic books are a unique American genre, especially the superhero. Like, I know France has got a big following of comic books like that. I think it's Tintin, and then you also there's a couple other ones.
Asterix and Obelisk.
Like, there's a few other ones. I know that, but like, you can't escape the fact that you show somebody from a third world country in the Superman insignia, they know what it is. Like,
yeah, that's very true.
Yeah,
that's
so. It is an American genre, so I will like say that for the defense of the like the pro-American sort of values that they have. But all that stuff's gone out the window in the later years. Like in these latest ones, it's full of fucking Marxist sort of communistic sort of fucking pro that speech, and I'm like, that goes opposite to what American sort of like the shows, and I'm like, Captain America fought these guys in the 40s. Like, fought Nazis in the 40s. Now you're sort of adopting those ideas, saying that they're good. Like, what was it? Captain America Winter Soldier and Falcon, the series.
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Falcon and Winter Soldier. And it was like, the main villain of that was that chick that was like, She said some things where I was just sort of like, that's, you're a terrorist. You've killed innocent people. I'm sorry, I'm not signing with you. But the way it's portrayed, it's like, she's doing this for a just cause. And I'm like, that just cause goes out the window when you start killing innocent people, because morally, that's wrong. Like.
Interesting, yeah. You know what I mean? I'll be honest, I barely remember that show. Because I found myself so disappointed with it, because I thought, like, all right, Marvel, like, it was starting to get long in the tooth, and obviously you had the Infinity Saga that everybody had to finish up on. That was great, but they just kept doing the same shit again and again and again. And it's like, why are you not experimenting with genre? Why was Falcon and the Winter Soldier not a buddy cop comedy? Why was Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness not a proper horror film? Why was Shang-Chi not a proper full-blown kung fu film? Like Shaw Brothers type, 1970s Hong Kong, Bruce Lee, throwback. And it had, all of them have had elements of those things, but none of them have just properly capitalized on it, and it just shits me.
Perfect example is the, you know, Netflix Daredevil series. It's like, oh, man, even
that was amazing.
Even Punisher. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
The first season of Daredevil was brilliant. And it's just like, incredible. Jesus Christ. Like, once again, it's everything to what we're saying. It's like limited budget. You put sort of these constraints on things where it's just sort of like, they didn't really lean into the whole, this isn't a superhero world. Like, yes, it's set in the, like, MCU, but you never really see anybody with, like, superpowers.
It's so street level,
And it's, and it's just like, this is brilliant. This is fantastic. Yeah. And it's got a limited budget. And that's, and it was, like, back in the day where Marvel was like, look, the MCU, the films, the thing that making us money, we've got to protect that. So we're happy to sell the licensing rights to this to you to see what you can do with this, you know, sort of C, D grade character. People sort of remember the Ben Affleck film, but let's move away from that. Like, go nuts with it. We're not going to have, like, we're not going to have so much oversight. You know, go show us what you can do. And you know what? Doesn't even need to be PG. Go full hand.
Yeah.
And then Netflix did, because that was when Netflix was coming up. And it was like Netflix were taking chances. And they were like, you know what? We just need to get people in. We've got the opportunity now to partner with Marvel. That at that time was owned by Disney. So they're like, so potentially a lot of money to be in here. But it's also it's like, well, let's fucking take risks. Like, let's make this story the best that we can. Let's look at source material and utilize that the best we can.
And I think, like, Jessica Jones as should be what every single filmmaker that wants to make a female superhero film should sit the fuck down and watch Jessica Jones, because that was tremendous. Mm. It was so well done. It had a really important message and poignant, powerful moments in it. It never felt like it beat you over the head like Captain Marvel did when, in the final fight, Just a Girl by No Doubt started playing in what was the most heavy-handed moment ever.
Well, when you said Captain Marvel, I was thinking Shazam. I was just like,
"Ah, yeah, of course,
yeah."
That sort of stuff was rough.
Oh yeah, and that's
you're right. Reining things in,
and just letting. But like, once again, at the forefront of your mind should be this thing. Yeah, look, I've got some political beliefs. People, not everyone agrees with. You know, that's fine, but like. These are the values that sort of inform these beliefs. I'm going to put these into this series, and by no means is it saying if you agree with them, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not by no means saying that I'm right, because
That's right.
Your values and your political views can change, which is as they should, as you grow, as an artist and as a person. The films nowadays, listen, Disney in particular. And it's like, they have there's clear messages throughout it. And it's just sort of like, people are getting jacked with it. Like, there's plenty of people that I know that I'm like, that would align with whatever community is, like, you know, a feminist sort of view of the world. And they're like, we're getting a bit jacked with it. It's to the point where it's just like, they feel like, you are insulting me now being a female. Like, can't you write... what you've essentially done is just taken two-dimensional, arrogant, fucking cockhead character men and just been like, we're just going to make them female, and that's going to be female empowerment. And it's like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's like, you're actually being condescending to your audience.
Yeah.
Both male and female.
The idea of women being able to do the same things men can do and all that sort of stuff doesn't have to apply to that arrogant 80s attitude that's been dated for male action stars for a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Like, but making it a female who's doing that makes it revolutionary. I don't agree. I think there's a completely different way. It takes you out of it as well, I feel, because it doesn't feel like a natural way for somebody to act in all instances.
Mm. I'm sick of seeing like 60 kilo women take on like 120, 130 kilo men and kicking their ass. Like,
even vice versa. You
know. Yes. Yeah.
Even vice versa.
Yeah. Even what, like, yep. I'm sorry. I'm like, what?
If you look like Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, and you're taking on a bloke that's 20 kilos heavier than you, fair fucks. I'm going to believe that. But if you look like Brie Larson in the Captain Marvel suit, where she just looks slim, I'm not buying it. Yeah. Even though she's got superpowers, obviously it's a completely different story. But you get what I mean, right?
Oh, like, Yeah. Look, I get it. But like, she never in that film, she never got challenged. Like even in all of her appearances, I haven't watched the latest the Marvels, but she has not, like, as, and I don't mean Brie Larson, but I mean the character, like, has never been challenged. And it's just this is why it's, no one responds to it. It's just like, we saw her, like, when she was getting trained by Jude Law, like, I can just remember bits and parts, so correct me if I'm wrong, but when she was getting trained by Jude Law, she still kicked his ass in training.
Her power was restricted.
Yeah, and her power was restricted. And then when the big fight comes and she's fighting Jude Law, she kicks his ass. And it's like, so where were the stakes exactly? Yeah. Like,
it went from being slightly even with her having an advantage to her now having this easy advantage over this guy to make it look like it's some kind of character progression, and it's not.
Yeah.
Going from stronger than to even stronger than isn't character progression.
It's also irritating, regardless of gender. It's infuriating, and this isn't just to Captain Marvel, this is a lot of these films that I, like I'll say, with these sorts of messaging. It's infuriating to watch a character say, this group has always held me down, and then watch them constantly kick their ass.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't make sense. No. If you're better than them in every single way, your entire life, how have they kept you down? It just does not make sense to me. And it's contradictory, and that's the thing that pulls me out of, like, I feel like those Hollywood films, there isn't deep thought put into that stuff anymore. It's just always the messaging. Circling back to Van Helsing and the films from the 90s and 2000s, I feel like there was a lot more thought put into that stuff, like the logical progression of things. There were definitely things that they fucking missed. Like, we're going to be talking about it right now with Van Helsing. Like, there was, you know, two hours and I think 11 minutes that this film, a good hour of that didn't need to be there. So.
100%.
Yeah, it's like, there are definitely fallacies there, but that's a matter of poor storytelling, not messaging, you know? So, like, to circle it back, because we've gone way off the track. Let's talk about Van Helsing. So, we normally start with the bad.
The dislikes.
Yeah. I think they're going to be longer than the likes. Fair?
I don't have many likes.
Okay, well then let's just go with the likes, because we'll rush fucking through them. So, why don't you start?
Okay, so the first thing that I really loved, and this is less to do with the movie, it's like the script or any of that sort of stuff, but I love the Aussie representation in there. I really, really love the Aussie representation. You know, you've got Hugh Jackman in the lead role. You've got Richard Roxburgh in the antagonistic role as Dracula, which I figured out. My missus always told me that she had a big crush on Richard Roxburgh.
Yep.
That's why. It's because of Van Helsing. I found out she's a closet Van Helsing fan.
Yeah.
And she's seen the movie about 20 times. So I didn't watch it with her. also, what's his name?
David Wenham.
Boromir's brother, Lord of the Rings. David Wenham. Even though I do feel like that character is unnecessary. But I'll get back to that.
Oh,
he was in 300.
Yeah, he was the guy telling the story. He was the guy. Shit. He was the one that lost his eye.
Yeah. Like, I've watched 300 in a long time. He doesn't watch it again.
I fucking love that movie, dude.
I know. You're very pro Snyder. I am.
Oh, dude, not even just pro Snyder. I'm just sort of pro-competent filmmakers.
That is a contentious question. A contentious point right there.
Yeah. That's an entirely another podcast, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah.
I love Aussie representation.
Yep.
I loved a lot of the cinematography and stuff like that. I loved the set design and all those kinds of things. The gothic elements. Some of the throwback elements to, like, older Universal Monster Pictures was interesting, but that it's a like on the surface, but a dislike as a whole. because, sorry, I've had this cough that just will not go away. So if I pause for a second, because I'm hacking my guts up. The guy obviously loves Universal Monsters, right? Mm. He directed The Mummy, both The Mummy films. And I actually think this was like the first attempt at the Universal universe. Mm. You know, everyone talked about like that Tom Cruise one. Mm. But this was like the first attempt at it because what you had Dracula, you had Jekyll and Hyde, you had Van Helsing, you had, Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, there were all these things in there.
I don't even think, but, I wouldn't even call that an attempt at like building a universe because I don't even think they would like, there was, no, it's 2004. Like there was no.
There was meant to be more of them, but because Van Helsing tanked so heavy, he didn't get the opportunity to do more.
I got that at the end. I got it because I got at the end, it was like, you know, very much Van Helsing and Carl sort of look off into the sunset. I was like, oh, they wanted this to be a buddy sort of a film franchise thing.
Yeah. That's really about it for the likes for me, in all honesty. Okay. Some of the creature design and stuff like that. The story elements on the surface were really interesting. But again, they muddied the waters way too much there.
They're fair likes, man. I could, you know, leave or take the Aussie representation. Doesn't really mean all that much to me. I don't see the world in colour, Jay. I love David Wenham. He's a great character. There was also a small Aussie film called Getting Square where he played a junkie. Oh my god, dude! You would think he was a junkie. He's a great actor.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, and look, Kate Beckinsale, you know, easy on the eyes. It's always good. She can kick ass. Well. Like she kicks off. Yeah. I can see why she got Underworld. Why they're like, let's put her in like the lead in this. I did feel like the set designs were really good. Like I said, I am becoming an old man, and it is those, I keep saying it, that era of the 90s and 2000s, because they were so informative of me growing up watching movies. They hold a special place in my heart. So I'm like, yeah, they just look good. Like they had a good mix of CGI and practical effects. Like, especially like that scene where Hugh Jackman's interacting with, Mr. Hyde. And I'm like, that's a completely CGI character. And I'm like, but it's just done incredibly well. I'm like, you can tell.
When they were talking, it was good.
Yeah.
But when they were fighting,
when they're fighting, but like standing there and Jekyll's interacting with him. Hyde's interacting with him, takes his hat, flicks his coat, and I'm like, that's all practical. That's all movement. And I'm like, that's really good. Like that's a really good cheat that I'm like.
And like compare that to The Scorpion King, which was another movie by this guy. Not The Scorpion King. The Mummy Returns, The Scorpion King. It was just The Mummy Returns. Anyway, Scorpion King was in it. When he comes out, the CGI was like, man, that was
wasn't the Scorpion. The Scorpion King was like the third one.
It was another movie that was done after.
Yeah, because that one had The Rock.
Yeah.
And that's universally universally known for its horrible CGI, even for like the time.
But like 4 or 5 years later, this comes out and the CGI is so much better.
Yeah. And the transformation of the werewolf.
Yeah.
I was like that. And then going back to, I remember like when I was young and I watched it, I was like, he's like peeling off his skin. I was like, what the fuck? Like, and then even watching it this time, I was like, that's a really good touch that I don't think I've seen. Like, I think Werewolf in London, American Werewolf in London, they transform differently. And Stan Winston like that. Yeah. That's iconic. And I'm like, to add an element like that, I'm like, that's pretty impressive. Like that, because I haven't seen that before. That's to a trope. Like I was saying, giving people in your, the, your art department freedom to sort of, we trust we put the right people here, go fucking nuts with this. You know, look, I don't know that's what they did, but I've just got a feeling, yeah. Like, I don't, that's such a fucking small detail that I don't see the director being like, you know, I'd be really cool. Unless he's a massive pothead or something, then maybe. But, I liked elements like that. Even when the babies, the little Dracula babies, they were blowing up. Yeah, I was like, but I was like, they look kind of cute too. I was like, I know that's marketing, but I'm like, I don't give, I was just like, I wonder if I could get one of those. Like, what if they've got like little plushies or toys or something? Like, I wouldn't mind one of those hanging off my computer.
I could see you in that.
Yeah, that'd be fucking cool. I might get a costume for Maple, for the dog.
Nice.
I like that. So yeah, the design of some of the characters. I really did like the Frankenstein's monster design too. I thought that was really good. Once again, different sort of a take. Really leaned into the disgusting horror of it. I was like, good, because that's what that story is. And I think that's generally where it stopped. Oh, the gadgets. That was something that I really liked. The Vatican sort of almost like MI6 James Bond-ish. I did like that element. I saw that and I was like, if you try to make him like a secret agent in that time, I'm like, but he doesn't have the suave or anything like that. Yeah. I was like, I sort of like that. Like,
yeah,
that's, like I said, it brings something different. And you want to talk about diversity and not being ham-fisted. He's in Vatican. He's in the Vatican City.
Yeah.
Like, and then he's there. When he goes underground, it's like, you've got all people, all races, religions. And all religions down there. Like, at one point in the background, you hear a guy, like, yell Allah. Like, you know, because Carl almost blows something up. A Buddhist monk comes and hands over, like, something else to somebody else. And I'm just sort of like, perfect. Like, they're all unified. Look, we're talking about a movie. We're talking about fantasy world.
Yeah.
In the real world, these religions don't get along. We know that. I'm not here to fucking get reminded of how horrible the world is. I want to watch a monster film.
Absolutely. Perfect. That was something, like, I appreciated the touch to an extent, but I didn't at the same time because, again, they didn't do enough with it.
Yeah.
It was such a small point that really just, it didn't really do much else for it.
That's something that I sort of address in my thing as well. Look, that's generally where my likes end with it. So why don't we just dive right into the dislikes?
Yeah, man. I think for me, some of the biggest things that I really noticed were, there were some serious cash burners in this movie. They had a scene in Paris, they had a scene in London, they had a scene at the Vatican. Like,
Budapest
all of these locations, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, some of them, I mean, I don't know whether or not they were sets or if they were actually on location or what, but even if they were on sets and they weren't on location or if they're green screen or whatever, it was really unnecessary stuff. Like, shifting around as much as they did just, to me, didn't make much in the way of sensible. I really just didn't like the Jekyll and Hyde stuff. I thought that, you know, Carl, I thought he was a good character and he was like really good comic relief, but again, not used enough in that role. They couldn't work out whether or not he was this serious sort of accomplice for Van Helsing, this sidekick, or if he was meant to be the comic relief. And from that sense, I was like, yeah, it doesn't work for me. It's a bit too confused, even though David Wenham was fantastic in it. And like, yeah, it was a homage to the Universal Monsters, but it muddied things up so much. Like, werewolves and vampires in the one place, okay, I can kind of get behind that to an extent, sure. You know, we've seen it. They've got an enmity and all that sort of stuff in other films and all of those kinds of things, but I just felt like they tried to do too much with it, way too much with it. You know, there were some things that I looked at and thought, fuck, like, this is really good, but why was it used here? Why was it not used earlier on? Like, that moment when Van Helsing's chasing down the werewolf in the village, and he steps through the steam, and you see him step through, and he looks like this badass. Why was that not the way we saw the character the first time? Mm. Why was that not his introduction? Do you know what I mean? Like, that was such a sick bit. And it would have been the perfect way to, you know, the perfect way to introduce him as a character and showcase him. Some of the other stuff, like the creepy crypt keeper dude hitting Van Helsing with the shovel, like that, what the fuck was that? That didn't make any sense whatsoever. He was just some dude that wanted to hit Van Helsing. Was he working for the vampires? Who was he? Like, they told us nothing about him.
I feel like that was just comic relief.
Yeah, and it, like, that's fine. Like, I'm happy to have a moment of comic relief and but all that sort of stuff.
But that's throwing in a joke where it's unnecessary. Yeah. Like, it was unnecessary.
Exactly. Igor working for Dracula did nothing for me. I thought that was just, you know, like, he didn't have much of a role.
Well, Dracula canonically has had an offsider.
Yeah, that's right. And that this was something else that I said is why Renfield? Why wasn't it Renfield? Why was it Eagle?
Like, yeah. I think they were just sort of killing two birds with one stone with that, to be honest.
Yeah. The other thing was, like, the Van Helsing mythology is so interesting. You know, he's like a Sherlock Holmesian vampire hunter. So why did we create a whole brand new character instead of going with Abraham Van Helsing? Why did we go with Gabriel Van Helsing, who's really a nobody? Like, I feel like I would have enjoyed it a lot more personally if they went from the Van Helsing mythology. Like, the Knights of the Holy Order isn't any more interesting than the original Van Helsing mythology, especially in the way they used it here, because it was used so sparingly. Like, it was such a fleeting moment that it just really didn't add anything to the characterization, or it felt like to me it served as a vehicle for us to know that he lost his memory, which, like, the whole memory thing barely had an impact on the film as well. Like, that felt like a real throwaway point that toward the end they were like, oh, shit, fuck, we forgot. He's lost his memory. We need to throw something in there about that. Like, it didn't play in anywhere. You know, if you're going to have a completely different character with a different origin and characterization, why bother making him Van Helsing? Why not just make him a generic vampire hunter? You know what I mean? Like, it's not Abraham Van Helsing, so guess. And that was a weird sticking point for me too, because it's like, you're such a big fan of the Universal mythology, why are you not using Abraham Van Helsing? Why are you know, were you only able to get the rights to the surname or something? Like, I don't know. It was just really strange to me. And, like, it was so confused, so much of it. Like, it can't figure out if it's an action comedy, if it's a horror film, if it's an adventure film. It has all of those elements scattered in it, but none of them are shown strongly, and none of them are shown in a meaningful way that makes you think, okay, this is the drummer, or okay, that's the drummer. It has the opposite effect. It just makes you feel confused, and it makes you feel like the film is confused. And the last thing I want to say, some of the dialogue, actually, there's two of them. Frankenstein, his dialogue, like, I remember literally just, like, at one point, he's like, if I stay alive, your kind will die. You have to kill me. Right? But 2 seconds before that, they're like, what do you want? And he goes, I just want to exist. What are you doing, dude? Do you need to die, or do you want to exist? Like, why are you giving us two completely different things? Yeah. I understand the duplicity of it and all that sort of stuff, but the duplicity should be from the characters who know he want to exist, but know he has to die.
I think,
do you know what I mean?
Well, I think even, like, you could still have that, but you have him work through it for longer than 15 seconds. Like, you have him be like, I just want to exist, but then by the end of the film, he's just like, no, you have to kill me because this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Like, it was such a weird, fleeting thing. Like,
yeah.
Like, obviously, you're meant to elicit sympathy for this character. And I did feel sympathetic for him, but not because of that. I felt sympathetic for him because he just, you know, he seemed like a really tormented sort of character.
You're always, that's what that Frankenstein's monster is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was the actor that, he's played Frankenstein quite a few times, that guy.
Oh, has he?
He's actually known for...
You mean Frankenstein's monster, not
Frankenstein. Yeah, sorry, Frankenstein's monster, yes.
Yeah.
And I suppose the last thing I want to say is, like, Van Helsing, like... So the memory subplot shit me. But the thing that really annoyed the fuck out of me, right, is that there was so much from that character that was dumb. It was fucking dumb. He didn't know how to fight vampires, but he's a member of the Knights of the Holy Order and goes around killing all these things, but he doesn't know how to fight vampires. And, like, that crossbow that he had that's like a submachine gun that fires crossbow bolts, that thing was stupid too because he couldn't hit anything with it, and we're meant to buy that he's this elite trained guy. Like, you're better off giving him a stake or something like that and showing him diving in into the fray and trying to fight and do all that sort of stuff where he's not missing and looking like a complete fucking schmuck. He's actually getting in, but he's being bested before he can deliver the final blow, the coup de grace. You know what I mean? Like, he's on top of them, he's fighting them, he's holding his own hand-to-hand with them. Mm. He's showing that he's a badass, and he's not looking ridiculous in the process. The weapon looked cool, but it did nothing.
To be fair... Miniguns aren't for accuracy.
No, that's true. I mean, spray and
pray. Like, I know. Yeah, so it's just like and I did think that, but then when you saw, and this is something that I'm like, by the way, I'm agreeing with you.
Mm.
But there was, I noticed that too, but then when I sort of looked very closely at some of the brides when they were flying, they had arrows in them, and I'm like, oh, he actually is hitting them. I was like, they were so quick that I'm like, you have to be very keen to say it. And I'm like, you didn't really need it then. Like, and then you see too, he hits one with incredible accuracy. Like, you know, turns it off for automatic and, you know, hits her in the ankle. And it's just like,
What are you, a stormtrooper or a sharpshooter?
Yeah, well, no, I was just sort of like, you should have just went with the whole, like, if it's a minigun thing, it's not for accuracy. Like, that's something that I'm like, you see in films and military films all the time, and I'm like, it's sort of shit. I'm like, you're not going to have control of those things. Like,
no.
They spit it. One, I think when they got brought, the first time you saw it was like Predator or Commando. And I'm like,
oh my god!
I don't think actually,
off the stand.
Yeah, I actually don't think they existed. I saw something where I was like, at the time, I'm like, because they were mounted on machinery. It was just something cool to do, like big strong dude to rip off and use. But anyway.
I mean, I know I'm preaching to the converted there. This Predator is your favorite film.
So. Yeah, well, because it is the best film ever made. Like, period. There's no argument.
Very fair.
Perfection.
Hit me with your dislikes.
Yeah, alright. So, one, the 2 hours it took. I feel like this is something you could have done maximum 90 minutes.
Yeah, lean 90.
Max, yeah. And that's even that sort of stretching it out a little bit. I didn't really like the... It felt like two films. Like, it felt like the start of the film, I was saying that stuff that I liked about having the Vatican almost being like MI6, where it's just sort of like, and he's almost like a secret agent. I'm like, I like that. That was cool. But then by the second half of the film, like, all that's completely gone. It feels like a different film, and it's more personal, and it's about his memory loss and him and Dracula having this great rivalry going back centuries. And I'm like,
I loved that, by the way. I wanted more of that.
That was good, but there is a way to marry the two. There is a way to marry the two. And I don't think that they fully committed to doing that. I think they went out, whoever it was, I don't know what happened, but they set out making this one film. They started making that it's fucking James Bond set in 19th century. And it's got Universal Monsters. And then somebody's interfered halfway through and they've done a hard reset. And they're just sort of like, this isn't working. Let's go.
I wonder if that is what happened, because it does feel like it. But at the same token, it all feels like the director's vision. Do you know what I mean? Like it feels like, I don't know. I just feel like he bit off more than he could chew and he tried to do too much and that was the problem.
Yeah, look, that's a very real possibility as well. I'm not certain enough about it. I did feel at times the acting, not by Beckinsale or Jackman, but the guy playing Dracula and the brides, dramatically overacted, and I don't think it fit. Like, I get that character needs to be very brooding, dark. Like, he's eccentric a little bit. You don't get to, 600 years old and have all your marbles. I get it. And he's supposed to be evil. I just didn't like, there were just times where I was just sort of like, oh, God, dude, like, this is, like, it's bordering on cringe.
I don't think that was him. I think that was the writing. Because I actually think he made chicken feed out of chicken shit, if I'm honest.
Yeah, but a good actor can make gold out of chicken shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, this is something where I'm like, I find these things hard to quantify unless we have definitive sort of thing. Like, I don't want to scapegoat the writers either and be like, it wasn't their fault. But it was just what I'm seeing, the product, I'm just like, this is bad. Like, this is very bad. Like, compared to what other actors are giving you, like, on set. And that's part of the problem too, is like, they very rarely interact. Yeah. Like, Van Helsing and Dracula come face to face once and then again in the final battle. That's it. It's just like, probably could have got them together a few more times, put them in a few situations. I really didn't like it. Like you were saying with Frankenstein's dialogue, I thought the same with Dracula's dialogue, and that also, but it also, the dialogue also feeds into the plot. So you have that moment when, like it's also, like, Dracula's motivations, right? They played it very much, and this is a problem with those 90s and 2000s films that I so dearly love. This is a problem with those, is that they're bad guys, they're quote unquote bad guys. They were still under the impression, it's like, it's enough that they're just evil.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, it's no, really not.
There needs to be more.
Needs to be more. And it's like, they were on the right track, they just didn't go further enough. So he's like, when he's with his brides, one of his brides dies and the other two's there, and they were like, oh, you're so cold. And he's just like, bitch, I don't have a heart. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
it's Dracula. What, you've been just living, like, with this guy for how long?
Yeah, and he's just like, I don't love. I can't love. Yeah. I'm incapable of loving. Hey, by the way, my whole point of this is that like, I've got thousands of children that I love. I'm like, hang on.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense.
But yeah, like, it was really, the writing was really bipolar.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It directly goes with the plot. That was the whole reason that they're trying to stop him, is from bringing his prodigy into the world. So I'm like, that's where, so I'm like, you're on the right track. Like, you could have been like, I'm immortal. Actually, you know what? I'm going to save that, because that goes into my rewrite. So that I didn't like. I'm like, you didn't give him enough motivation. I didn't know why the fuck he was there, other than just, he's Dracula and he's evil.
Yeah.
Because even, dude, they were making some pretty good arguments. And they were like, the vampires don't kill more than they need.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, that's not a bad fucking deal, dude. Like,
you're going to bring... you're not the one getting killed.
Yeah. Well, just fucking stay in the city. Go in at night. Like, hang some garlic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's not going to be that bad. Especially if you bring in tourism, you know what I'm saying?
yeah.
But, like, well, they've had, like, so many strangers now. They're like, we don't like strangers. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, I didn't like that. And it goes, like, that's the thing holding me back from liking this, really, like, pushing me over the edge and liking this film is the inconsistencies with those two things. Like, if you don't have a solid foundation, don't have a solid plot, solid motivations for your characters, then you don't really have too much of a film, in my opinion, anyway. So why don't we get into the rewrites? As usual, I've got a feeling yours is quite lengthy.
Yeah, I've gone into a fair bit of detail, actually. I've sort of taken it back blow by blow. It's not as long as you'd think, but it's a couple of pages. But I think it wasn't... This, I feel like, is more of a knockdown rebuild almost. Actually, no, I say that. There is some good stuff in there that can be kept. It's just focusing it a little bit more. So, I mean, for me, first things first, memory dealio's gone. Working for the church is done. We don't need any of that. We're dropping Frankenstein. We're dropping the werewolves. We're dropping Jekyll and Hyde. I'm going straight up vampires, nothing else, right? I know Universal Tribute, all the rest of it, I get why he wanted it all, but it was just too much. And it was like, things were shoehorned in there specifically to, because he wanted them there. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't serve a greater purpose in most cases. They're gone. I'm starting this with a vampire attack. I'm starting it with a lady being attacked by a male vampire. This could be in London, it could be in Paris, wherever it is, right? We hear a voice from the shadows, and like I said before, with the stepping out of the steam deal or stepping out of the fog deal, this is how we see Van Helsing. Now, because it's not Abraham Van Helsing, I don't know if he's got, like, if Gabriel has ties to Abraham or if it was a, I think it was a character that was just created for the film. Anyway.
I think they've given the name Gabriel because it directly relates to the Bible.
Religious, yeah.
It's got religious connotations. And Gabriel's I think he's the angel of death.
I think so. I'm not sure. I'm not up with my Catholicism.
Or vengeance.
One of them. I can't remember, either would make sense in this case as well because, you know, you've got the good and evil thing.
Gabriel was the favourite angel, most favourite son of God, I think. Favourite angel of God.
Maybe.
Yeah. Because that's why him and Lucifer are at odds, isn't it?
Maybe.
I can't remember. I've got to read my Bible.
That's why I need my missus. She knows all that shit. Happens when you grow up an Irish Catholic.
Protestant.
We have this moment where he steps out to rescue the woman, and I want the vampire to be like, oh, Gabriel Van Helsing or something. He knows who this guy is, right? So he turns tail and flees, and I think, like, a lot of the space-age super-duper weapons that Van Helsing has are kind of silly, especially without the Knights of the Holy Order angle, so I'm going back to basics. Garlic, holy water, steaks, all that sort of stuff. He gives chase, takes off after the vampire, and we have this cool moment where you see how good Van Helsing is as he runs through the streets, following this faster and stronger creature, but keeping up with him pretty comfortable. Right? He catches him, he starts to play with him, toy with him a little, but before he can administer the death blow, the vampire says something that gives old Gabe the willies. He grows stronger. He's coming. The vampire laughs, Van Helsing stakes him, and away he goes into dust. Right? Poof, he explodes. He returns home to his base, wherever he is. He talks to Carl about the vampires being bold at the moment. You know, things, there's a lot of attacks happening at the moment, far more than usual. And Carl says, that's funny because we just received a letter specifically about him. Now again, we don't name Dracula yet. when Helsing's given this letter, and it's from the father of Anna and Vulcan, saying how he's dying and his children are the last two left in his family, how they've been keeping him contained in their home, and that if they die, he'll be free to roam. So they need the legendary Van Helsing's help. So off we go to Transylvania, right? We're in. This is 10 minutes, and we're in. We're heading to Transylvania. We know what's what. We cut to Anna and Vulcan at the funeral of the father. The funeral's at night time because that is the tradition of Transylvania, whatever. Anna's, you know, she wants to fuck tradition off because shit's getting hectic. But Vulcan argues it's a family tradition. This is the first time that we're going to see the Brides of Dracula, but they're not coming in those, in that bat form that they're in. They're coming wearing black. They're disguising themselves as guests of the funeral, right? Someone notices them and says to the other, were they at the church? No, they weren't. I didn't see them there because they got the veils on and all that sort of stuff, right? So this is when they reveal themselves. They attempt to steal the casket with the father's body in it and flee to Dracula's castle. Vulcan isn't armed, but Anna is, and she manages to fight off the sisters, stopping them from taking the body. Anna chastises Vulcan for not being ready and for allowing the brides to get away with the body. This is also an instance where we can see how angry Vulcan is, because that was a big part of his characterization, was this angry kid, right? The Brides of Dracula return to the castle without the body, and they're chastised by Renfield, Dracula's familiar. So we don't have Igor, we have Renfield, who says that he's going to have to do it himself. Okay? Van Helsing arrives in Transylvania. He's met with the same levels of distrust. He meets with Anna, and she knows who he is. Vulcan says he doesn't want his help and that their father should never have written to him. Anna says that it's their family's cross to bear and he's not needed and he should leave, blah, 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 blah. Anna says, Anna turns on her heel and Vulcan follows. We can have Van Helsing try and earn their favor, follow them, whatever it might be. Vulcan tries to attack Van Helsing, again showing his temper, but Van Helsing takes him down easily and without any real harm. He says something about them being the last two and that he's there to assist, not take over. So he's kind of trying to ingratiate himself to them, show that he can be an asset, blah, 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 blah. We know that Anna's calling the shots because Vulcan, he's too much of a hothead, whatever else, right? So Anna agrees and tells him to follow them to the castle. Vulcan's not happy about it, but stuff him. Carl's provided with books and scrolls that he can read through that explain the history of Dracula and the family and how they're connected. So we're not seeing a lot of Carl here, but he's still going to have a sort of important role. He still functions kind of similarly to how he did the first one. That night, we see old mate Renfield digging up the grave and taking the body of their dad. When this information is relayed to Vulcan, he decides to take matters into his own hands, and he heads off to Dracula's castle in a rage. You know, he's Sunny at the toll booth in The Godfather. It's a trap, of course, but Vulcan's too angry. He plays right into Renfield and the bride's hands. The father has no blood in him, and it couldn't be used anyway because he's dead. So they explain this, whatever. But they needed someone to come. They take some of his blood, dropping it onto his coffin. And finally, we awaken Dracula from his slumber. So he's been asleep the whole time. This is the first moment we're going to see him. Okay? He's weakened, but he feeds on Vulcan. And once he does, he regains his power. We see him go from quite shriveled and weak-looking to this full form again. However, because the brother is from the family he's from, he's not fully under Dracula's spell yet, and he's not quite a full vampire, so he flees the castle, right? So he's sort of, in a way, protected from becoming a vampire, so he still becomes this Mongol half-breed type dude. As Dracula is awake, we see vampires in the castle that also awaken from their slumber, and Dracula tells them to feed, okay? Vulcan arrives to visit the sister. We have this tense moment with the water dripping and everything, but this time the brother's standing upside down on the ceiling, not a werewolf. He collapses at her feet and starts explaining, but when Van Helsing comes into the room, he flees. We have that chase scene through the village, but more of Dracula's minions are in the town now and being nighttime. So Van Helsing starts to fight them off because there was jackal vampire killing in this film. Why, I don't know, but we want more vampire killing, and this gives us a moment to have that. He's quickly joined by Anna, who fights alongside him, and we see how well the pair works together. One of the vampires has been kept alive for information, When Van Helsing tries to kill the brother, she stops him, and they take this last vampire, who informs them he's not going to stop until he has her. Obviously, being Dracula needing Anna. Dracula needs her, but he won't say why. He manages to struggle away, and they have to kill him before he can hurt one of them. Maybe he lunges at Van Helsing, or he lunges at Anna, or he lunges at Carl. Whatever, right? Carl's been researching this whole time. He explains something about Anna being able to leave without it freeing Dracula from this place, because she's the last living member of the family, because the brother's technically dead, right? So Van Helsing convinces her she has to leave. So this is when we have the scene with the horses, the decoy carriage, all that sort of stuff. So we can still have that moment, because that was pretty cool. The brides give chase. We see the thing with one of the brides dying after she goes after the carriage and drops off the cliff. We have two brides left. So we're still killing the brides off, but we're doing it a little bit slower at this point, and keeping that for a showdown. So they make it to Budapest, same as what they did in the original. Carl manages to decipher some information about how to kill Dracula, but Carl is taken by one of the brides, and a trade is offered in Budapest. However, this time, it's Carl in exchange for the girl instead of the girl in exchange for Frankenstein. Yeah? Anna and Van Helsing formulate a plan to get Carl back, as he has crucial information to kill Dracula once and for all. Killing Dracula will also bring back Anna's brother, because even though he's been bitten, the blood still protects him, and he's capable of coming back. We do the bit at the ball, with all the vampires being there. Van Helsing gets Carl back, but due to the numbers, they're overwhelmed, and Anna's taken by the remaining two brides. Van Helsing fights off the vampires, enough so that he and Carl can escape, but barely, and being pursued. They flee into the night as Anna's being flown back to Dracula's castle, but she manages to kill one more of the brides and almost manages to get away. One bride left. We head back to Dracula's crib. We learn that he needs Anna's blood to revive his children, who again are in the gross egg pod things. Once he's had the power flowing through her veins, he'll be strong enough to give them all life to take over the world. Blah, blah, blah. Great emo scene-chewing vampire stuff from Richard Roxburgh. Right? Give him this really sick sort of monologue there. Something to really chew on, pardon the pun. Van Helsing comes back to the castle with Carl, who has explained what needs to be done to beat Dracula. He manages to sneak his way in and finds Renfield, who he gets information he needs and knocks him out. He shows mercy even though he works for a vampire. That's an important bit to remember. Anna's attached to a machine where once Dracula feeds on her, the remainder of her blood will be drained and it will be passed onto the pods, opening them and freeing his fucking disgusting children. He's also mad about his bride, so he's sort of going full Drac, real angry. Anna tries to plead with Vulcan, who seems to have fallen further under Dracula's spell. So Vulcan's sort of working for Dracula. As Dracula leans down to feed, however, Vulcan dives for him. He stops him from feeding and attacks him, but he's no match for blood. But that's okay, because Van Helsing arrives in the nick of time. He frees Anna, but the final bride attacks her. Her and Carl manage to fight her off, while Van Helsing fights Dracula. The key to killing him is a stake with the blood of Anna. So we have the big moment, similar to the scene with the syringe, but they have to get a stake to Van Helsing this time, instead of a syringe for him to inject himself with the vampire, the werewolf fuel, right? So, he's about to kill Dracula. Anna cuts herself, gets the blood on the stake, chucks it to Van Helsing. Van Helsing's about to deliver the final blow, but in comes Renfield. So he stops him from staking Dracula. Dracula gets the upper hand from this and grabs Van Helsing and bites him. But as he does, Carl smacks Renfield, who falls off whatever they're fighting on. It's high up and on the outside of the castle. So he manages to grab hold of something and he holds on precariously. Anna stabs Dracula while he feeds on Van Helsing. Dracula has this epic death scene where he falls off the edge as he begins to harden and crumble to dust. Renfield, who's hanging on for dear life, screams for his master and lets go, falling for his doom, making that ultimate sacrifice and dying for old Dracky. Van Helsing looks like he's going to turn, but because he hasn't, and because Dracula's dead, he doesn't turn. Whoever Vulcan, who they think should leave because the head vampire is dead, dies because he was too far gone. This replaces the emotional moment that you have from Anna's death and allows her to survive instead of stupidly killing her off. We then have a moment where Van Helsing takes Anna to the sea, and we have a somewhat happy-ish ending roll credits.
Mm.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot in there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like it as a Dracula film.
Okay. But not as a Van Helsing film?
No.
Interesting. Okay.
I think not having the other Universal monsters in there is, you miss that blockbuster effect of it.
Okay, interesting. Like,
I feel like it is just straight up a Dracula film.
That's fair.
Like, it's less about Van Helsing. Like, and it's also, like, don't really dive too much into Van Helsing's motivations or anything like that either, other than just he wants to, or are you just going to go with the straight up, like, he's a monster hunter?
I think from a characterization standpoint, maybe Dracula's sort of a one that got away or something like that. Like, there's a long-standing history there.
You can maybe inject that into the elements that you've already got. I feel like the focus of it was more Dracula than Van Helsing. That's why I'm like, it feels more like a Dracula film than Van Helsing. Because it's like much Van Helsing, like, he's just reacting.
Yeah, that's fair point.
And I'm like, yeah, but it, like, Dracula's driving that, so I'm like, well, it's a Dracula film then. Whereas,
makes sense.
Yeah. But like I said, as a Dracula film, I was like, that's good. That's really good. I can see that being short too. Like, not short, but like an appropriate length.
Yeah. You know? At 90-100 minute mark.
Yeah.
Is sort of what I feel like that.
Not overblown. Yeah, not overblown or anything.
Yeah.
And look, I'm a little bit biased because, like I said, the things that I like, you disliked.
So, yeah.
You know, I've got a lot of bias there. Good rewrite though, man. It's solid. Like, I see the progression of that film from start to finish. You did have some really good fucking, like, I could see some really good, what's the word? What do they call it? God damn it. My fucking film school's failing me. Set pieces.
Ah, yeah. Yep. Well, that's sort of where I wanted the blockbuster element to be, is like some big fight sequences and stuff like that. Well, so you've still got the nuts and bolts of blockbuster stuff.
Hallmark of any great blockbuster film is that they have like 2 to 3 set pieces, not just one.
Yeah.
And like yours had that. So.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. No. It's what I said then. You always come solid, especially with these bigger films. You're really good at understanding that. I'm getting
a lot of into it. Too much thought. Should mind.
Mine's very different to yours. Once again, it's very short.
As always.
Yeah. It's much shorter and it's focusing more on the bigger points. So what I do, a lot of it's the same. I'm just sort of changing some motivations here and elements there to sort of give it a little bit more character.
Nice.
So I personally would keep all the Universal monster stuff. I love that. It brings a certain summer feel to it for me. I'm just sort of like, yeah, fucking, I want to do. Like, I want to see fucking, you know, a werewolf and a vampire fight. Of course I do.
Very fair.
Yeah, that's fucking cool. The thing that I would change though is the what's the word? There's a word for it. The jet setting, like what you said, like bouncing from like France to Rome to God knows London, where else.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit all over the place. I'm like, maybe keep it to one or two. I'd still keep the Vatican thing and I'd bring in like the Knights Templar more, where it's like that underground order, and give them a little bit of a like I said, a MI6 feel to it, where it's just like you got, you know, you got M and you got Q, you know, Carl's Q, you know, M's the fucking, the priest that he confesses to.
Yeah.
And stuff, and you see that, you see some of the gadgets and stuff, because I'm like, they're all cool. I'm like, you know, you're not expecting that. The things that I would change would be, is that when you get to, Transylvania. I like how the brother's already dead, essentially, or you think he's dead. But he's done in the classic film way where it's like anyone who falls off of a cliff.
Off a cliff.
It's like they're not dead. unless
they're Sean Bean.
Unless you're Hans Gruber. But like I guess with me, with mine, I'm struggling to where to put it, but fleshing out that Van Helsing and Dracula connection a little bit more, but then also bringing Anna and her family to the fold. So what I was thinking with it, and you mentioned just that last part there is like stupidly killing off Anna. I'm like, I actually thought that was a great thing to do, because you never saw it in films like that back then. Yeah, never really seen it in films nowadays too. It's just like, you killed off a female lead? Like, what the fuck?
It was normally like a smaller character for the motivation, the main male character, yeah.
Yeah, and normally it's like, it's them two running off in the sunset at the end anyway, not him and the bunny. I'm like,
True. That was, that's a fair point.
That was pretty, like I said, I appreciate films that try to hit for the fence.
Yeah.
Whether or not you pull it off, whether it becomes a foul ball or a home run, it's up to the audience. What I would have done is that when she gets taken, she actually becomes one of Dracula's brides.
Ooh.
And then suddenly it becomes, now Van Helsing's a lot more invested. Because it's like he's gotten there, he's fought alongside of her, he's got to know her and stuff, like he knows that family and everything. And then now bringing this more into it as well. When you find out the backstory, you also have Carl in the background. Like, maybe he sees the painting, maybe he sees a few other things, like, you know, because now he's in that location, he's got access to all these other books that he wouldn't have had access to at the Vatican.
Yeah.
What he finds out through it is that these three are tied together. So Van Helsing is centuries old, I think. He's got amnesia. The Vatican have taken him in. So the Knights Templar have found him. They've trained him to be a monster hunter.
Yeah.
And what you end up finding out is that Van Helsing is the one that tried to, or the one that killed Dracula when he was human. Like he wasn't before he was Dracula. But the thing was like, maybe he was doing some heinous shit then too. Like, this is when you bring in the real world elements to it. Like, you know, was it Vlad the Impaler was essentially, like, you have that into it. And it's just sort of like, maybe Van Helsing with like the Knights Templar back then, centuries ago, were like, we need to stop this dude. So they brought war to his doorstep, essentially massacring him and his entire family. That would piss me off. Makes a deal with the devil, comes back, sets a curse upon Van Helsing, whatever. You know, they're in this epic duel then.
Van Helsing to repeat it.
Loses his memory. The thing is though, Anna's family is from Dracula's bride's side.
Oh.
So she's a reincarnate of the bride. That's why he wants her. And because it's just sort of like, it's all this blood of my blood sort of stuff, where he's like, he's had other brides, he hasn't been able to reproduce. He knows that he's internal. And he just keeps creating other monsters, soulless monsters, even his brides. But if he's to create a child with the union with his bride, then that's something else. That's something that maybe he can love because it's a piece of him. So it's bringing a little bit more depth into him. And you don't have thousands. But, you know, and then you can put in the prophecies and stuff that Carl's reading that's like, Carl's figuring this out. And then, it's weird saying my name. he figures this out, but it's also, there's a prophecy that, like, the Dracula that we're seeing is like Dracula light compared to the sun that he's trying to be born.
Yeah.
So, once again, stakes fucking raised. It's just sort of like, you know, this is the coming of the Antichrist, essentially.
Mm.
And then you have that big epic duel. You have Frankenstein a little bit involved with it because, you know, he was there. It was one of the experiments. You know, you have that whole element, Dracula sort of funded Dr. Frankenstein. You have Frankenstein's monster there. Then, you know, it all goes to failure. Sort of Dracula kills Dr. Frankenstein as the Frankenstein monster is on the run. He ends up finding Van Helsing. They end up teaming up because they're just sort of like, all right, well, fucking, he killed my father. You know what I mean? And Van Helsing's just like, but Van Helsing, when they meet, they've got a fight then too, because Van Helsing's just like, you're a fucking good stuff. He's like, dude, like, I just want to exist. Give me a break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have that element in, so you can even kill him if you want, but I'm like, yeah, keep him alive. Let him have an ending. And that can be something else.
Yeah.
It's another movie that you can work into. The crux of this all is making, you also got the brother, Anna's brother. Mm. He's still changed into a werewolf. He makes Van Helsing into a werewolf, but they go at it in their fucking hairy werewolf forms, and Van Helsing kills him, coming at a cost though, like he's very badly injured. And then he's going into that final battle, lower stakes, because now he's, you know, he's got Frankenstein's monster with him.
Yep.
But now he's got to fight Anna and Dracula, because now Anna's just sort of like, she's all in. She's a bride, so she's just sort of like, no, I'm with you. And she's also maybe preppers rather than, you know, laying a sloppy egg. You have that. And when they fight, you know, you have the big fight at the end. Van Helsing's torn though, because she's got Dracula. Like the Dracula, the Antichrist in her. What's he do? He can't save her. So he ends up killing her. It has to be hard after he's killed Dracula. So he, you know, and she goes full fucking ape shit on him. So then sort of they're the big fight at the end. He kills her. Do the, you know, burning body at the end, going off into the sunset or whatever, but then you see that it's like the baby doesn't die. So it's stillborn.
Nice.
Like, then credits. You know what I mean? So it's just like you've had this full journey. And it's just sort of like, like saying, you've given a little bit more depth to the main characters, given them a little bit more reason to fight, like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I didn't like that. Like I said, I did like that they killed Anna in the end of Van Helsing, but it was also, it's like, I feel like you wasted it, because I'm like, they fell in love very quickly. I'm like,
I didn't like that
album. Yeah, I was like, that was very weird, but I was like, oh, I want to go with it. But then you kill her, and I'm like, for no reason other than just to rejoin her with the family, I was like, that sort of sucks. Like, but if her death meant something, like if it was hard for him, so I didn't feel like it was hard for him. Like, well, it wasn't really, like, it was an accident. Like, it was in his werewolf form. But if you make it difficult for him, then, yeah. But, yeah, look, that's my movie. It's still sloppy. It's just changing main points. But, yeah. And also, too, like, that Vatican, that's something that I forgot. That Vatican element, bring that back in for him to sort of go back. Like, he needs to, like, lick his wounds. That was something, that was something after he's fought the other werewolf. It's like he needs to lick his wounds. And then it's also, you know, that's when he learns to, and the Vatican, they're just sort of like, okay, for the better of humanity, Anna needs to die.
Yep.
There's no ifs or buts. And he's just like, no, I can save her. like, fuck you guys, like, going against us. So you sort of got that, you got that challenge, you got that challenge as well. Yeah, it's a tough decision for him to make.
Mm.
Yeah.
Would you keep Vulcan alive then, rather than having Van Helsing kill him? Would you keep Vulcan alive for that final fight? So there's that gut punch for the brother and the sister having to fight while Van Helsing's fighting Dracula and all that sort of stuff?
No, because I want the fight between Van Helsing and Anna, not Anna and Vulcan.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
Like, I want it to be like, you know, it's like you see him pulling his punches.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of like, nah. Yeah, he's playing more defense than he is offense.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I can't kill her. I'd rather her kill me.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, but then it's like, you're also fucking holding, you know, the OP Dracula.
So we
are fucked. But then maybe she has a moment of clarity as well in that fight, and she's just sort of like, you need to kill me.
Yeah.
You can't let me.
That would be the Frankenstein moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to.
Well, you know what? Maybe this is where you bring Frankenstein into it. Maybe it's like he knocks some sense into us somehow, like, you know, through the machine that they've got fucking there. Lightning hits him and goes through her, or I don't fucking know, but knocks some humanity into us. Have some Hollywood magic put in there.
It could be as simple as Dracula killing her turns her back. And then he's got to kill her as her.
Yeah, maybe she's like, you got to... Maybe there's a thing where it's like, you got to burn the bodies.
Yeah, you gotta like she's still pregnant or whatever, or, you know, Dracula's still done whatever he's done, and because they've killed Dracula, she reverts to human, and then there's that...
Or you have the Vatican, right, being like... Anna's got to die before she can bring this child into the world, right? Sorry, what'd you say?
I said raping kids.
Oh, fuck. This is the only instance where the Vatican's going to be pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Where they're like, this baby's got to, we got to flush it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And they're like, it's like, Van Helsing, you know what you need to do. And then, say when he's going to do it, like because he's also got to kill Anna as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
He kills it. He has that moment, like, as she's dying, and then what she says, you don't know what she said to him, but then you see him sort of do something to her somehow. Yeah. Stab her, you know, stake into the gut or something. You're like, fuck, take that.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to them at that, you know, that end shot where they're on the hill and the pyre's going and she's in the middle of it. She goes up into the heavens. You see all that bullshit, right? And you still see, you see the back. It's a shot where Carl and Van Helsing aren't facing the camera and they're just looking at the pyre. Carl turns to him and is just sort of like, there's no turning back. Like, we have to go. He's just like, Carl walks away. Van Helsing turns around and he's got the baby swaddled. It's just like, walking off. And it's just sort of like taking this element of like, if it's raised right, like, you know what I mean? Like, it won't be a monster. Cause then it's like, you also have like Frankenstein. He's that weird uncle, right? He's that weird uncle there. And he's just sort of like, oh, I'm not a monster. So it's just sort of like, you know, we're not born monsters. We're created, you know. That's seeing that side of humanity. I'm like, you know what?
Mm.
Yeah, that's my fucking film.
I like it.
Van Helsing raises the Antichrist. But it's just got, I'm like, if you're going to swing for the fences. Have all those, have all that bullshit in there. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Very fair, very fair. I like it. Yeah. We always have such different approaches.
That's good, though.
Yeah, 100%. I'm about it.
It's what these should be.
And on that note,
probably
worth saying, in the comments, let us know. Whose did you like more, mine or Carl's?
Mm. I'd also...
Also.
I was going to say, Any suggestions?
For films? Oh, yeah.
Throw them in there, too. Anything that you'd want us to read. And maybe we do special ones where we just sort of, like, we don't do a preamble or anything. We just go straight into it. You know what? This is how I'd fucking write Lethal Weapon 7. You know? So, any suggestions? Go for it.
I will say one last thing in closing that I would be remiss to not say. That hat that Van Helsing wears... that's going down in history as one of the, I have to say, like, top 10 cinematic hats. That's a great hat.
That's a fucking shitty hat. I hate those hats. They look so stupid. Why?
That's why I love it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's giving me Kurt Russell in The Thing energy.
Nah. Yeah, look, I will say it is iconic, but
it is.
I fucking it hate is. It. Looks good. All right. Well, look, I think that's the podcast for this week.
I agree. This has been the Angry Screenwriters Podcast. Remember, if you don't want us to be angry, or if you want us to stop making this podcast, start making movies better.
Peace.